These are the stories that you need to know about today. No question, especially on this day. Americans in Moscow again. It's becoming a pattern under Trump. I'm going to bring you the latest. Europe and Ukraine, both under stress for different reasons, by the way. But Zelensky manages to push for another meeting with Trump, and it's granted. But what has come of it? You're going to hear it for yourself. And then Mr. Trump flip-flops on the European tariffs. And what does that mean for the people of Greenland? We're going to be in Greenland. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to welcome you to The Effect, where we cover and analyze the big stories that are changing our world. And on that note, my fellow Miamian, Steve Witkoff, is in Moscow, along with the other Miami guy, Jared Kushner, to talk to President Putin. That meeting is expected to happen within hours. And obviously, we're going to be covering it for you. I reached out to Mr. Witkoff last night to try and get some insight from him. Hope to hear from him at some point as we continue to cover this story for you. Look, this is a very significant meeting. It almost feels like there's something brewing, right? Like I just told Rachel. Something's up. Something's going on. Think about it. Europe is in chaos right now. Its sugar daddy, the United States, is looking elsewhere for allies. And that new ally may be in Moscow. Watch Trump as he continues trying to tell the Europeans, like, you know, there's a very famous book in the United States that almost all the women in the United States have read. It's called He's Just Not That Into You. Listen to Trump talking about Europe.
Certain places in Europe are not even recognizable, frankly, anymore. It's not heading in the right direction. The consequences of such destructive policies have been stark, including lower economic growth, lower standards of living, lower birth rates, more socially disruptive migration, more vulnerability to hostile foreign adversaries, and much, much smaller militaries. Europe and those countries have to do their thing. They have to get out of the culture that they've created over the last 10 years. It's horrible what they're doing to themselves. They're destroying themselves. It's beautiful, beautiful places. We want strong allies, not seriously weakened ones.
I think we could argue that he doesn't like her anymore. By the way, when I say Europe, I'm not referring to the people. The people of Europe are wonderful people. I'm talking about the lofty institutions that run it, right? I'm talking about the EU, NATO. These are platforms that are led by people who are unelected. Most of them are bankers who are groomed by financial giants like BlackRock. And who do you think they're going to be responsive to? BlackRock, the richest company in the world, probably in the history of the world, with 14% of the world's assets, or their own people? If you guess the former, you're right. BlackRock loves the EU's Kaya Kallas, as they do Germany's Friedrich Merz. They adore Francis Emmanuel Macron. All were anointed, put in their jobs by billionaires, but are despised by their own people, by the way. Not my opinion. That's not Rick Sanchez saying that. That's according to every single approval poll that is taken in those countries. And I got to tell you, the latest and perhaps worst example of this type of European ineffectiveness is that guy right there. See the guy on the right? That's NATO's Mark Rutte. He seems to me like a politician who likes to look at himself in the mirror and likes to hear himself talk. But the problem is the guy has no answers. He's like a car salesman. His words seem to say nothing as he stumbles and mumbles his way. Look, here's an interview he did last night in Davos. I watched it. Take a listen to this guy.
But look, what did you do?
President Trump has been clear from when he was in office, Trump 45, also when he came back into office, Trump 47, that when it comes to the protection of the Arctic with a priority on Greenland, we have to spend more energy, more time, more focus on this, because we know the sea lanes are opening up. The Chinese and the Russians are more and more active. So what we discussed last night, how in a practical sense we can get this done, and we agreed on these two tracks. One is the seven countries in the high north, including including the United States, working together to protect against any adversary. So that will be something where NATO is heavily involved. And then when it comes to Greenland specifically, continuing the discussions they started last week, the Danish delegation, Secretary Rubio, Vice President Vance in Washington, to continue that discussion, also to make sure that when it comes to Greenland specifically, their economy, their military situation, Russia and China will never get access.
Again, what the hell is he even talking about? I mean, the guy's got on a $10,000 suit, but I don't even think he knows what he just said. And really, what the hell do Russia and China have to do with Greenland's sovereignty? That's the issue. That's the question, right? Nothing. Nothing at all. It's a canard. This is what sales people do to try and sell you a car. They deflect. Look over there. Don't look at the price. Don't look at the price. And as Europe scrambles, Russia pours it on. In their latest salvo, Mr. Putin welcomed the invitation from Trump's global peace board, but he did so with, you got to give the guy credit. This is a crafty kind of caveat. So what Putin did is he said, yeah, I'm willing to give you $1 billion as a permanent member of this board, this fund, right? But it's got to be collected from the $5 billion that was frozen by the Biden administration. Clever.
We've expressed our willingness to allocate $1 billion to the Board of Peace to support the Palestinian people first off, and then help resolve the broader Palestinian issues. We can allocate these funds from the assets frozen by the previous U.S. administration. We've discussed this option with the representatives of the current U.S. administration.
And then there is Zelensky, whose problems are compounding daily, and they're coming from both inside and outside, right? Ukraine. Members of the Ukrainian Rada, its parliament, they're increasingly attacking him for corruption and mismanagement as they watch their country deteriorate under the weight of a war that seems, frankly, unwinnable at this point. But the most pressing concern is in Kyiv, right? There, things are so bad, the mayor is warning of a humanitarian catastrophe, as reported by the Times of London, in this revealing portrait of present-day Ukraine. According to the article, the mayor is asking residents of the city to save themselves from these horrible conditions brought on by a crippled power grid. More than a 500,000 people have already left the city, and he's asking the rest to do the same. He wants people in his city to go, take off. I can't help you. It's expected at least another 1 million people will probably follow and leave as well. These conditions in Kyiv, by the way, are causing significant political rifts between Zelensky and the mayor of Kyiv, Mr. Klitschko, who blames Zelensky, and Zelensky blames him. Now, he's blaming Zelensky and his government for not being able to restore the failed power grid after Russia's retaliation for attacks on its own energy grid and an assassination attempt on the residents of President Putin. That's when Russia decided to hit Kyiv after Kyiv hit Russia. It goes back and forth. Zelensky blames the mayor. The mayor blames Zelensky because Zelensky says he won't even bother to meet with him, right? So if Zelensky won't meet with the mayor of Kyiv, what's he doing? Zelensky has chosen instead to unexpectedly fly to Davos, where he met today with Mr. Trump. He's hoping to convince Mr. Trump to talk about the future of Ukraine, but apparently it did not go very well. We just received this. I want to play it for you. Here's a snippet of Mr. Zelensky giving a news conference that, by the way, Mr. Trump wasn't a part of. Mr. Trump got on a plane and left. What this tells me is the meeting with Mr. Trump probably did not go well, because in this news conference, Mr. Zelensky seems to be blasting, criticizing Mr. Trump and criticizing the European elites as well. Take a listen.
President Trump led an operation in Venezuela, and Maduro was arrested, and there were different opinions about it, but the fact remains, Maduro is on trial in New York. Sorry, but Putin is not on trial. And this is the fourth year of the biggest war in Europe since World War II. And the man who started it is not only free, he is still fighting for his frozen money in Europe. Thankfully, the EU decided to freeze Russian assets. But when the time came to use those assets to defend against Russian aggression, the decision was blocked. Too often in Europe, something else is always more urgent than justice.
It almost sounds like he's auditioning for a pundit job on CNN. Might be something there. Meanwhile, in Davos, Mr. Trump appears to be the talk of the town. He's the center of every single conversation. There's nothing else to talk about. By the way, the reaction is good, the reaction is bad. His Greenland threats, his demands, and his tariff threats have Europeans angry and in many ways acting confused and befuddled before Mr. Trump decided late today, just a few hours ago, to pull the tariff threat. And U.S. politicians, by the way, like the man who will likely be the Democrats' choice for the presidency in 2028, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, he's there in Davos, and he went after the president without mercy. Take a listen.
This guy's playing folks for fools, and it's embarrassing.
Europeans think this is diplomacy, and this will ultimately work.
Oh, this is
work.
Diplomacy with Donald Trump? He's a T-Rex. You mate with him, or he devours you. One or the other.
And Europe's being
devoured? People need to stand, but no, the Europeans could be if they continue down this path and process.
What Newsom complains about regarding Trump's aggressive stance toward Europe and even Greenland, some others welcome. However, here's the question. Here's the real question when it comes to this. What are the people of Greenland saying? What do they have to say about this? It's their country. Aren't they the most important voices in all of this? What do they think of NATO? What do they think of Trump, for example? We think that's so important. We've got somebody there asking those questions for us. I take you now live to Nuuk, Greenland. And that is where Charlotte Dubinsky is standing by right now to try and answer some of those questions for us. Charlotte, so what do the people of Greenland say? What are they telling you?
They're telling me that they want to be a country in their own right, Rick. They say that they want independence. The polls show 85% of people on Greenland think that this country should go it alone. But I was speaking to an MP earlier today, a pro-independence MP, who was telling me that even if Greenland becomes an independent country, they want to then be part of NATO. That seems to be strategically important to them. And when it comes to this idea of could they be bought, all these reports, I'm sure you've read them, that Donald Trump is offering $100,000 to everyone in Greenland. That's been poo-pooed. First of all, people say you can't put a price on our freedom. This is not 100, 200 years ago when countries came in and bought and sold people. We are not for sale. And that is the message that I'm getting over and over from the people here, is that decisions about Greenland should only be made here in Greenland. And that is not the case right now, Rick.
There's a saying in America that nobody can be bought until they hear the right price. And I'm kind of wondering if that's the approach that Mr. Trump is going to be taking. Because yesterday, you heard him. He said, look, I'm not going to use force. I'm not going to attack Greenland. I just want to work something out. Is there any hearing for that kind of conversation that maybe America might be a better partner than the Europeans?
There's a sense that people are ready to do business here, and business means that they will allow countries to come in and potentially mine the resources here, something like 24, 25 out of around 30 critical raw earth minerals are apparently found here in Greenland. So this is a country that could be economically massively lucrative for countries like the US. So I think there is a welcome for people who want to do business, but not a welcome if that welcome means handing over sovereignty.
And I think that's what the sticking point is here. You can offer money, but how big does that check have to be before somebody goes, yeah, okay, maybe I don't want to be so sovereign after all because I've got 2 million in the bank and that'll do me for the rest of my life. Greenlanders are thinking not just about themselves, they're thinking about the future. This is a culture, the Greenlanders, the Inuits here, that have been around for 4,500 years, and they say you can't put a price on selling that. You can't put a price on what Trump himself described in Davos as being a badly located, big, beautiful, icy island. For them, this is home, and it is hugely important. It's ingrained in the society here. So I'm not sure that there's a price to give it up, but there's certainly an opportunity to do business.
I'm wondering how they think geopolitically. I always wonder how people think. When I was on vacation in Europe recently and I played some golf with some people from Europeans, I asked them a million questions about Russia, about China, about the U.S. And you happen to be by far one of the best correspondents and certainly one of the most charming. So I imagine everyone likes you just from meeting you. But did you get a sense when you told people that you're with RT, that you're from Russia, did you get a sense of resistance, antipathy? Did they welcome you? How do they feel as well about Americans in general? How do they feel about the Europeans? Do they love the Europeans? Do they feel like they want to be a part of Europe? What's the thinking amongst the people there? If you can share some of that.
Well, Greenland is part of Europe because it is still a sovereign territory, part of the Danish kingdom, which is part of Europe in general. So there's no hatred towards Europeans as such, but they're saying, you know, what we want is we want to be neutral, we want to be on our own, we want to make our own decisions, whether that's being friends with the Americans, the Russians, the Chinese, all open to it. When it comes to asking about the situation, because we have heard Trump saying on so many occasions, we need to take over Greenland for its security. There's these threats coming from Russia and China. And I think people forget, when you look at the world from the top North Pole and you look at the Arctic Circle, you see how close Greenland is to Russia. Russia is, I think in terms of ownership, it's about two-thirds of the Arctic Circle is Russian territory. So these are neighbouring countries. But everybody said here to me, we're not afraid of Russia. We don't think Russia is a threat to us. Russia has always been our neighbor. It's never been a problem. We don't understand this idea that Trump is suggesting this is a threat. What this could be possibly to do with is the fact that as we see potentially temperatures rising and the laneways, the shipping routes of the Arctic opening up, what this is about countries now wanting to get the rights to that shipping. And they say, look, those rights are our rights because it's off our land. And that's what we want. So I think Greenlanders are looking for neutrality. They're looking to be good neighbours with all of those countries around them, regardless whether we're from Russia or we're from Europe or from the United States. But what they're clear about is they're not for sale. They don't want to move from being a Danish colony, which is what they've been historically until they got some form of semi-autonomous, in the last few decades, and move to become an American colony, and even worse than that, not even an American state, but a territory, say, like Puerto Rico or Guam, where the Constitution only is applied as America wants to apply it.
Yeah, and they get maybe half a vote once in a while on anything having to do with America. But I am so glad that you mentioned the point about this story. We just heard Mark Rutte, for example, say that he's only in this to make sure he can keep the Chinese and the Russians out of the country. It's a canard. It's a pure canard. It has nothing to do with the sovereignty of a country. And you're right, because, you know, obviously we've been monitoring the reaction and following the news conferences coming out of Greenland. And even the members of their parliament and their politicians and others, we've heard them say, what are you talking about, China and Russia? We don't feel any threat from those countries. And yet it's the excuse that's being used. So I am so glad you mentioned that and that they mentioned that to you. In other words, it's part of your reporting. Charlotte, you're great. How's the temperature?
-1 at the moment, but not the coldest day so far. We had -9 2 days ago, and believe me, even after being in Russia and experiencing minus temperatures there, feels a bit different here. The wind factor, my goodness. But Rick, the other night, for the very first time, I saw the Northern Lights, made it all worth it.
Nice, nice. Well, I can tell you, compared to where you are, I think Moscow feels like it's Miami right now. In fact, I'm going out in shorts to go jogging. Maybe not, maybe not. Thank you, Charlotte. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for great reporting, as usual. When we come back, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to bring you a conversation with a man who's going to be talking to me live, who is so important to the multipolar world. He was one of the founders of the BRICS Bank, essentially. He is a former IMF director as well, Paolo Nigora. He's going to be joining me here in just a little bit. It's not the first time I talked to this guy. Last time he and I got together, we made news. Headlines all over the world, as a matter of fact. We'll see what he says this time. Stay there. We'll be right back. We've got the perfect guest to talk to about what's happening with this incredible shakeup that is happening globally. He is a former IMF director. He is also someone who was instrumental, if not one of the founders of the BRICS Bank. So, you know, it's about the Global South. It's about the BRICS community and what's happening in this new multipolar world that seems to be establishing itself right now with all these permutations that we've seen going on involving Greenland and Russia and China and the Europeans and Trump. Can't even say America anymore. It's really more about Trump. Paolo Nogueira Batista Jr. is good enough to join us once again. And, you know, it's funny. The last time you and I were together, we were talking and suddenly you and I were on top of a mountain. And suddenly a cloud came by and I couldn't see you and you couldn't see me. But somehow we finished the interview. So it seems right now like a cloud has come over the entire country as I get ready to talk to you. What do you think? Let me just ask the question generally first. What do you think of all the things that have been happening within the last 30 days in this beautiful planet of ours? Seems crazy, doesn't it?
Look, we're in a highly critical situation. I think it's the worst geopolitical situation since World War II. And this is due to a number of factors. And one factor I would highlight is that the United States is not willing to recognize and accept the new reality of the world. You know, just 10, 20 years ago, the U.S. was in its unipolar moment. Now there's something else going on. There's a multipolar world coming about. There's Russia resisting strongly the attempt to weaken it through Ukraine and winning on the battlefield. You have China winning on the economic battlefield against the United States. And what Trump is doing is something really incredible. He's rupturing, as the Prime Minister of Canada said, he's rupturing the alliance between the United States and its traditional partners, the Europeans, Canada. So it's I wonder what this means.
Doesn't that mean, going by your definition, that you know this and I know this because you and I've been talking about this in the past. We are heading into a multipolar world where countries like China and Russia and India and Brazil, South Africa, etc., mean more than they used to mean. Isn't what Trump is doing essentially accepting that by burying or diminishing the old powers, the Europeans?
Well, I think he's unwillingly doing that because he as a politician, as a president, and the political establishment in the United States are basically still very much in the business of preserving world hegemony. But whether this is what Trump is doing helps that or not is a debatable point, because let's say that the United States' main goal is to counter the rise of China. I don't know how this helps this objective. I don't know how rupturing relations with traditional allies helps the United States contain China. It's not clear to me at all. So it's a confusion. Trump has established a confusion in the world. And I believe he's established also a confusion in terms of the international policy of the United States. Hmm. Although this is very difficult to interpret because he's a very mysterious figure, really. He's called, some refer to Trump as mad, and he seems mad often. But I think there's some logic in this madness. Hmm? I agree that it's very difficult to try to rationalize what the policy of the United States has become.
Is it as simple as this guy only knows one thing? If you really look at Trump, he's a horrible business person. In fact, he's failed at every business that he's ever ventured in, right? Bankrupted 4 or 5 different companies. The only thing he was very successful in is his own brand with a television show in the United States, which is what put him on the map. So that's the reality. And when it comes to real estate, he is good at predicting what the good products are, you know? And as most real estate guys, he just wants to buy up the good stuff. He wants the big mansion. He wants that neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. So this is so simple. He wants the oil in Venezuela because it has got more oil reserves than any country in the world. He wants Greenland because it has arguably more rare earth minerals than any country in the world. That's it. He gets those two things. He's as powerful as China and Russia, or better. Isn't that all it is? Isn't it as simple as that for him? He doesn't see the stuff that you and I talk about with, you know, the global South communities and all that other stuff.
You know, Rick, I think in this confusion, Trump has had some victories. We must recognize that. His operation in Venezuela was remarkably successful at a very low cost. He kidnapped the president of a country and imposed sort of control over the new president with little price paid in terms of little or no price paid in terms of loss of U.S. lives, U.S. soldiers. And he's using that. He's telling everybody he did that again in Davos. Look what we did in Venezuela. That's a demonstration of our power. The other thing is that one thing that really surprised me, Rick, was the weakness of Europe vis-a-vis Trump. Since last year, at every turn, Europeans were weak. They showed no capacity to resist.
Yeah.
And this has, of course, strengthened Trump's hand, because it's true that he's rupturing the alliance, but it's true also that he's doing this at little cost with little resistance. Now with the issue of Greenland, finally, Europe seems to have tried to resist more. But even now, we don't know really how far this resistance will go.
You know what's interesting, though, is what you just said. Yeah, he's hurting Europe, there's no question. And he's making fools of them, or they're making fools of themselves in many ways. But by doing so, he's actually assisting Russia. He's actually assisting China. Zelensky just held a news conference where he complained about the United States and about the Europeans. He feels like they don't have his back anymore. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. Since the very beginning, you remember, Trump signaled quite strongly that he was willing to solve the Ukrainian crisis, the Ukrainian war, at the expense of some traditional goals that the Europeans and the Americans had. Mm. This was a realistic move on his part, because what do you have now in Ukraine is a fact, which is Russia is winning on the battlefield, and the war against the attempt to defeat Russia or weaken Russia through a proxy, Ukraine, has failed. No? So Trump was in a position to recognize that this has failed because he was incoming president. He said, this is not my war. So he's been strengthening the hand of Russia, no doubt. And you notice that Russian authorities have been very sympathetic to Trump at many turns, including now on Greenland. So Europe is in a bind here because on the one hand, it has this conflict with Russia unresolved, and on the other hand, it's being attacked by the United States. So it's a two-front war that Europe is now engaged in, and something will have to give because Europe is not strong enough to wage this two-front war.
What if Europe decides to go ahead and embark on new relationships and they say, okay, if our sugar daddy, the United States, doesn't want to take care of us anymore, we're going to look eastward. We're going to look to Russia. We're going to look to China. As a matter of fact, France, Italy, Finland, Germany have all made overtures within the last 5 days toward Russia, saying, in so many words, we'd like to figure out a way to welcome you back into the European community. What do you make of that?
I think Europe is moving closer to a realistic recognition of the fact that the war is unwinnable in Ukraine. And given the weakness of their relation with the United States, they're possibly going to try to make a deal with Russia, to agree to a peace agreement on Russia's terms. So I think Russia is winning not only militarily, but also diplomatically. And this is due to a large extent to European mistakes on the one hand and to Trump's stance on the other. With respect to China, I mean, it's normal that Europe should look to China as well as Canada is doing it. So this goes to show, in my opinion, I may be wrong, this is all very difficult to interpret.
Of course.
But it goes to show that the U.S. is really weakening its position. It's leading other countries that were traditionally aligned to the United States to come closer to Russia, to come closer to China. So one wonders whether Trump is on the right track from the point of view of the geopolitical power of the United States.
Let's talk money, because it's something that you know as much about as anybody else. And the real question of all of this is the breaking news that happened just about an hour and a half ago where Mr. Trump said, okay, forget about those tariffs on Europe. I had tariffs, but now I'm not going to have tariffs. And apparently it's another flip-flop. In fact, they've got a name for it in the United States. It's called, you know, taco. For some reason, where Trump puts tariffs on countries and then comes back 3 or 4 days later and say, okay, no more tariffs, or maybe just a little bit of a tiny tariff. What do you think that does economically for the world, the global markets, and for the United States?
Well, clearly this tariff policy of the United States, erratic and aggressive, is doing harm to trade because of the costs it imposes on trading partners and because of the uncertainty it creates. Take, for instance, these tariffs that were recently announced on the list of European countries because of Greenland. What do they mean, really? It's really absurd because, you see, the United States at the beginning of 2025 imposed high tariffs on many countries, including most European countries. And then it went country by country negotiating bilateral deals,
right,
including with the European Union, and accepted a bad deal for Europeans. And now this bad deal is being thrown out of the window by these threatened tariffs on countries because of Greenland. Now, then Trump does this a few days ago, like a few weeks ago, and then comes back and says, no, the additional tariffs won't be in place because I've got some deal concerning Greenland. I wonder what this deal is.
Yeah.
It's not clear. But what is clear, that tariffs, you know, are being used by the Trump administration as never before. They've become a weapon of intimidation, of blackmail against countries, instead of being an economic tool. Something completely different under Trump.
While this was happening, I don't know if you noticed, well, I'm sure you noticed because you're a super smart guy, gold hit an all-time high. It seems like people throughout the world are turning to currencies and other types of banking systems, for example, as potential alternatives to the U.S. dollar and the hegemony set up around the U.S. banking system. Might this continued threat of tariffs, put them on, take them off, freeze assets, take somebody's assets, kidnap a president, eventually just lead the world to say, we cannot trust that system?
I think so. To put this in perspective, I think the process began, really, took off, really, when Russian reserves were frozen in 2022. Gold has been rising since then, you know? So it's pre-Trump. It's a pre-Trump feature, the weakening of the dollar and the rise of gold and other alternatives, including the Chinese currency. Now, what happened after Trump? Trump aggravates this problem because he brings more uncertainty into the system and more distrust of the United States. And currency issues are always political issues. International currency is also always linked to geopolitics. If the United States is seen as weaker, more confused, its fiscal house is not in order, and the currency is weaponized. So this is an ingredient for making a substantial change, gradual perhaps, but a substantial change in international monetary arrangements. And gold is at the forefront of that.
Is it gold? Will it be gold, or will it be the yuan, the Chinese currency, or will it be digital currency? For example, Bitcoin, they say, will be the next gold, for example, as soon as it's institutionalized, and I think part of that is already happening. Which direction do you think it will go in?
Well, people are trying to move out of the dollar. So where are they going? They're going chiefly into gold or other precious metals, mm-hmm. silver notably. The Chinese currency is probably a destination. And also the currencies of other Western nations, not necessarily the euro, but other smaller international currencies. Mm-hmm. Again, the dollar is still the major currency. This must be recognized. But there's a de-dollarization going on. If you look at the trade patterns, the currency denomination of trade patterns within BRICS and outside BRICS, it's increasingly among national currencies. Hmm. Look also at the way the PBOC, the Chinese Central Bank, is behaving. It's signing with dozens of countries bilateral swap agreements denominated in renminbi, in yuan. So you see, the dollar is still the major hegemonic currency, but it's losing ground. And Trump, in my opinion, has done nothing to reinforce the dollar. On the contrary, he has accelerated a problem that was created under his predecessors. So Trump is not a complete discontinuity, you know? He's a representation of the United States' predicament, a superpower in relative decline and unhappy with this, trying all it can to reverse this trend.
Explain to me, if you're right, and we go to precious metals as some kind of future currency, or at least something to base it on, how does that happen? Because I would think we'd need to come up with something to replace, for example, SWIFT, in the banking system, where it is manageable but not controlled by any one entity. Because if you just turn it over to China and they become as bad as the United States was, or is allegedly, then we've got still a problem. Wouldn't that be where maybe the digital formats that are out there now would be necessary to create some kind of more independent system?
Let me try to address the points you just mentioned. Precious metals, they're not going to be a new currency because they fulfill only the reserve function of money.
Got it.
So people move into gold as a safe haven or into silver as a safe haven, given that the traditional safe haven, the dollar, is no longer safe. What could a future currency look like? This is very much into the future, but it would be digital, as you say. It could be official. It could be a plurilateral currency. Now, SWIFT is a different thing. SWIFT is a means of messaging and facilitating cross-border payments. China is already developing, for some years now, has been developing its own alternative to SWIFT, which is CPIS. And this Chinese system, or CIPS, sorry, CIPS, mm-hmm. this Chinese interbank payment system is an alternative to SWIFT. It's growing. It's still small relative to SWIFT, but it's growing. Now, you're totally right about what you said, that turning things over to China would be problematic, you see, because what is the problem we have now? We have a situation where one country supplies the
everything.
Currency.
Yeah.
The international currency is the national currency, the U.S. Now, what would that make? Would it be very beneficial from the point of view of the world as a whole if China just replaces the U.S., it would be, in a sense, the same situation, a national system, a national currency, playing an international role. So again, this is in the distant future. What we need is an international currency that is not national.
Right.
And but we're still very far away from that.
Well, the Bitcoin guys, you know, the Sayers of the world will say, we have the solution. Use something like, something like what is established with Bitcoin, for example, or stable coins to create that system where nobody controls it. It's in a bank, it's in computer vaults somewhere. Do you see that coming about at some point?
Well, possibly. Who knows what awaits us in terms of technological developments. But I believe that Bitcoin may not be seen always as safe. And safety is fundamental for a reserve currency, for a currency to be a reserve asset. Maybe the way so-called Bitcoins would develop would be through stable coins issued by national authorities. Mm. As you know, many central banks are working towards creating their own stable coins, their own digital currencies. And this may be a way forward for the international system.
But in the end, the most important thing is that you have countries like China who feel damaged. Russia, obviously, has felt attacked financially. More recently, India. Being told by Trump, we tell you who you can trade with. You don't decide who you can trade with. Brazil was punished by the United States for its prosecutorial system. So you have big, big countries who are looking at themselves through the eyes of victimhood based on what the hegemony, big word we always throw out there, is doing. It's not any one country and what it might do. It's not about what Brazil and Lula da Silva is going to do. It's not about what Xi or Modi or Putin is going to do. It's about what they can do together, right? And that's where I leave it in your hands. You're the guy who's kind of been thinking through this for the last two decades of your life. What can they do? What power do they have that maybe they don't even know?
Look, Rick, the BRICS, you mentioned the four original BRICS, China, India, Russia, and Brazil. The BRICS are important. They're working together. But one problem we have had over the years is a lack of cohesion. The issue that we may raise now is whether Trump's aggressiveness, you mentioned some facts concerning China, Russia, India, and Brazil, whether this aggressiveness will favor our cohesion or whether it will scare the countries into taking the foot off out of the accelerated, It's an open question. Take the case of India, for example. Let me tell you quite frankly, India has been a major factor in holding back the BRICS in recent years. The question I ask myself, which is not clear yet, is whether this stab in the back that Trump gave to his traditional ally in Asia, which is India, whether this stab in the back, which you mentioned, whether this will change India's stance. India is the current president, holds the rotating presidency of the BRICS in 2026. What will India do? Will it make progress or will it try to lie low? Now, Brazil is another thing. Brazil actually so far has been relatively successful in facing the threats that come to the United States, the measures that come from the United States. But I can tell you, being quite frank with you, the Brazilian chairmanship of the BRICS last year in 2025 was a disappointment. It was weak. And maybe because Brazil wanted to be cautious in face of the numerous threats that Trump made against the BRICS. So I would distinguish, really, being quite honest, that two countries that have shown in the world that have shown a true strong capacity to face up to the United States, to face up to Trump, China and Russia. So when we speak of the global South, we must distinguish these two countries. These two countries have faced up economically and in the case of Russia, militarily, quite well to the West. And so we must look to China and to Russia as countries that show the way, in my opinion, because the United States sad to say, it doesn't understand, you know, nice speeches, European flexibility. It's in the business of power. It's in the business of raw power. It only respects those countries that display raw powers in military and in economic terms.
And we have 1 minute left, but it seems to me the one act of raw power that Trump has shown the world is the kidnapping of Maduro. Is that the one thing you think, if there's trepidation in some of the global South countries, was that the act that caused it?
No doubt. I mean, the operation was very effective, amazingly so, surprised everyone. And so this is a power move. Trump not only kidnapped Maduro and is submitting Venezuela to a sort of protectorate, but he's giving a warning to everybody. Look at what I can do.
You're next.
He actually says this in so many words.
Yeah.
So I think the Venezuela event was a major wake-up call for countries all over the world, especially in Latin America.
Wow. Well, you're brilliant. Thank you for taking us through this. It's really a really fine-tuned explanation of where we are right now and where we may be heading as well. My good friend, Paulo Nogueira Batista, Jr. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
It's always
a pleasure.
Thank you
for the invitation, for your kind words.
I know you're a busy man, and I thank you for taking time for joining us. Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Well, wow, what a week. We have gotten so many comments from you on so many of the interviews we've done this week, including with Trump loyalist Arthur Estopinan from Washington, who defended vehemently all of Trump's policies. And, of course, we disagree. So let's take you through some of these comments. At John McCain says, the guest was completely ignorant of truth and facts. He is obviously a Trump goon. Okay. Philos liked my arguments. He says, Rick, I like your bluntness, and you're right. Coco Buffs, great name, says, this guest is so delusional. Horrible take on geopolitics. You mean like when he said Trump is nice because he's letting Venezuela keep half of its profits? Because he did say that. So I think I get your drift, sir. Also, or Coco Puffs. Also, at mine full stop says, meanwhile, love your work, Rick. Shout out from Australia. And then finally, we got one more. AR Water Adventure, says, I really love the way that you explain to him, because he was a Trump person, but I did explain to him. And by the way, I like him. He's a decent, respectable man, and we had a respectable disagreement. He said, it was the USA that destroyed the homes and the livelihood of millions of people. Your guests should know, accept, and express the truth that nothing happens in a vacuum. Good point. As usual, all the feedback. Okay, now can I turn? All the feedback is appreciated. I'm on YouTube. Check me out at Journalistically Speaking. And don't hesitate to speak your mind. It's okay. Disagree with me. Agree with me. Whatever it is, bring it on. And we'll share. Also, look for me on X, where you can find me at Rick Sanchez TV. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for letting us into your home. I'm Rick Sanchez. And we'll be looking for you next time.